We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Two balls, no strikes, the count from Gio Gonzalez. And there's one into left center field. This ball is gone for a home run. Manny Machado hits his third of the postseason. And the Dodgers grab a second inning lead.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We have some activity on the Manny Machado front. We have some contradictory reporting, and we have some anger from an agent, and we have a lot of kind of interesting things to discuss.
Well, anytime an agent takes this kind of step, I think it's rare that an agent will take a step this aggressive, and that's what Dan Lozano did in issuing a statement that names and calls out Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney, and he says, I've known Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney for many years and have always had a good professional relationship with both, but their recent reporting, like many other rumors in the past several months, have been inaccurate and reckless when it comes to Manny Machado. That's stunning to me because, and I wonder, you're always questioning the motive of an agent. An agent's job is to represent his client and to get the best deal. And so immediately you wonder, how does this help accomplish that? And I think what it does in sort of revealing the fact that you're disgusted by the fact that this is out there, you're giving it more credence by amplifying the report.
Yes.
So now everybody knows that you're unhappy that your client was only offered, only in quotes, $175 million over 7 years. So you are, in some ways, giving the reports more credibility by denouncing it. Does that make any sense? Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. It is, you know, drawing attention to it. But I think here is the tweet, the exact tweet that Buster Olney put out there, and I think it's a really interesting one. He says, the White Sox offer to Machado is for $175 million over 7 years. In some ways, their approach is like Boston's with J.D. Martinez last winter. The Red Sox offered $100 million and waited for 2 months. If CWS, Chicago White Sox, offer emerges as the best, a big question is, would Machado / New York Yankees, NYY, re-engage? So to me, David, you got a couple of things going on. You're discrediting his reporting, but you are, while doing so, saying that you got a low ball offer, that's not enough money. You're saying that to the White Sox. You're also saying, hey, we are open for business.
You're telling the 31 other teams out there, hey, can you do better?
Can you do better than 175?
Because that's where we are right now.
So that aids you by putting that number out.
Absolutely.
It makes it, you know, that if I'm another team, this is what bothered me about it, because I think that Buster Olney's right. I think the White Sox have made an offer, and now they sit back and wait. And why would you bid against yourself? You wait and then find out, well, they're giving us 8 years and they're offering $250. And then if you really want to make that step, then you make that step. And if you say that's too rich for my blood, that's your decision. But by making an offer, by being involved, by the things that they've done to create interest with him, they're playing a long game with him. They are not trying to sign. You know, I've been sitting here waiting, like, is it going to be done today? Can they get it done this weekend? Will they have it? But that's not the way that they're going about it, and they don't have to. They're going about it probably in the correct fashion. The only difference is if you get a 7-year 175 offer from the White Sox or the Yankees, where are you going? You're not going to the White Sox, right?
Well, I don't know that, because I think that this is just the first offer, and right. I think that if the White Sox are the only team to make a formal offer to Manny Machado, why would you?
No.
Why would
doing
you
the right
outbid
thing.
Yourself? I mean, you're,
right.
you're competing with yourself. There's not a market. The market will be what the market is.
What will the market be? What will
I think
for?
Eventually. Two things. One, I think he'll probably sign for over $200 million.
I agree.
Okay?
Yes.
But the second part of that is that I think that we probably are looking at, you know, you can look at a contract and interpret it a lot of different ways. And you referenced this during the 5 at 5. You know, the bare minimum of this offer could be 175 over 7.
Right.
But when you factor in escalators and clauses and all the things that will maximize the earning potential of this contract, it probably does put you north of $200 million. That's my sense, based on the way that other reporters, like Bruce Levine, came back and refuted this or responded to this.
Right.
John Heyman said
the first number begins with a 2.
Yeah, and Bruce came back and said think present market value and deferments. A contract can hit over $200 million. That's what Bruce tweeted out and talked about here with McNeil and Parkins, and we're going to talk to Bruce later. So I think that the interpretation of the contract is also important here, because we're talking about 175 over 7 based on what we know, or the bare bones of what we know, where in fact that it depends on how you interpret the maximum value, which could be what it seems more reasonable. Because right now it does seem like a bargain, and you know, some people even think it's insulting to Manny Machado. Everyone should be so insulted to be offered $25 million a year to play baseball. But I think that
it's so below market, it would be an insult to a guy like that, wouldn't it?
You could take it that way. If it ends up that being the final offer he signs for, perhaps. But I think it also would be reflective of the changing marketplace in Major League Baseball. But you also have to, if you're Manny Machado, take responsibility for, you know, driving your market down by saying the things that you said during the World Series.
So there's one other element to this. The very fact that the agent names Buster Olney, and obviously Dave Nightingale has been reporting on this as well, and he was the one that said it's not an 8-year deal, it's a 7-year deal. You know, who knows? Maybe there's some kind of clause or escalator in there that makes it 8 years. Maybe it is 8 years and 250. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he calls out Dave is due to the number of years. The fact that he calls out Buster Olney is because it is – excuse me, Bob. I don't know why I called him Dave Nightingale. Maybe because I'm looking at you. The fact that he called out Buster Olney is about the money. So Buster Olney did not get the money figure from the agent, okay? He did not – that the agent didn't tell him 175. So the question then is, did he get it from the White Sox? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he got it from industry sources. You see what I'm saying?
I'm going to say no, too.
It doesn't do the White Sox any good to get the number out there lower. How does that help them? You know, the White Sox would go along with whatever the agent is saying. They wouldn't contradict it. There's no way they're giving a dollar number to Buster Olney.
It doesn't help them because it invites other bidders.
Exactly.
Why would you want to do that?
Yes.
Why would you want to drive up the auction?
So maybe the agent talked to somebody and complained about it. Maybe that got back to Buster Olney. I mean, I don't know how.
We've both been in those situations.
Yes.
You know, you're dealing with a touchy negotiation, whether it's a holdout, whether it's – I mean, everybody can reference their own situation if you're a reporter.
Yeah.
And you know that agents do talk amongst themselves. And
right.
Sometimes if you're going to complain about something, those things get back to people who are plugged in the media. And
national guys are usually plugged in to agents, right?
That's where they get – the bulk
or
of their information.
If you've covered a team or lived in a city, you have a chance to be plugged in to a particular guy in an organization. That's not unusual. But you know, when you start following the breadcrumbs of the thing, the agent, it's very interesting, because this is, as much as we talk about it as a complaint, it really is a free advertisement for exactly what you're saying.
It really is.
Yep.
So bottom line it, because if you're the White Sox, you're a Sox fan, and we're following it closely in Chicago, how does this, if it does, affect the Sox's ability to land Machado?
312-644-6767 is the number. Answer that question. Does this help or hinder their opportunity to get this guy?
And is it an insulting offer? Do you think? Are you insulted by the fact that that's all the Sox will do, or that's all the Sox will offer Manny Machado?
312-644-6767, William Hall on the score. Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. So what's the answer to the question, Mr. David? What's your takeaway from this?
Well, I think that this probably doesn't have much effect on whether or not the White Sox will land Manny Machado or not. Because here's what I guess I ultimately think is after giving it a little more thought. You know, this is the public aspect of this is, to me, a little bit unprofessional. I think when you have an agent calling out anybody, and it's not just because we had a couple texters when I referenced this earlier, oh, you're just a reporter complaining about another reporter getting called out. It has very little to do with it. I think it's unprofessional to do your business publicly to this degree, and I think calling out these guys specifically is a bad look. That said, I don't think that the Yankees, I think it'd be naive almost to think that the Yankees or the Dodgers or even the Cubs would look at this revelation publicly and be surprised. I think within the industry, there's probably people an awareness that if that is indeed where the starting point is in terms of negotiations with Manny Machado, Dee Webstein knows that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, the Dodgers know that. Brian Cashman knows that with the Yankees. These aren't going to be surprises public or privately. That, publicly perhaps, but not to the executives who are in the know.
Yeah. I think that if you're being honest about it, because you don't see it happen, David, that tells you that it is outside the norm. And why would you go to that extent? That tells me that the agent is really frustrated by the market, not getting the offers and he doesn't want it out there that he's not getting the offers and he's trying to drum up business and business is not there. The White Sox have as good a chance as anybody on this guy because they're one of three teams that have talked to him, basically. They're one of three. They're the only team that's bid on him, right? And everybody else seems to be waiting on Harper. From my viewpoint, just looking at the thing from a distance, I'm not near the inside of any of this. But it does seem like the Phillies have pivoted to Harper. If they can get Harper, they're going to do it. It does seem like the Yankees have pivoted away from Machado, and it does seem like the White Sox have pivoted toward him. And I don't know who else. I understand that the Phillies are still involved, but doesn't it seem like the Phillies – listen, everybody has a list of things they want to get done. If the Phillies can get Harper, their next move might be Keuchel. It might not be trying Kimbrel. To get – yes.
Yeah, the Phillies kind of rumor mill kind of links them to Keuchel, Kimbrel, and Harper.
Right.
And if they can get those three, that's quite a winter.
Yes.
I don't think that there's a whole lot of momentum anymore that you know, again, based on the reporting of this, that they're going to get both Machado and Harper. I think those kind of ideas have kind of, we're not talking about that as much anymore. Here's the other aspect of this is that, you're right, because there has to be some motivation to bring this publicly. And even though the executives privately may already know where this stands, when you take this public, you create create more pressure because of talk shows, because of the media pressure, because of the fan base. You create a public aspect to this that maybe doesn't exist, and maybe that helps spur negotiations. Maybe it helps spur on a team that isn't involved right now to get involved. And I think that's why you see this happening, and it doesn't happen that often. When it does, it almost seems a little desperate.
It seems desperate, and I think part of the problem is Machado did not handle his time in Los Angeles correctly, so they're not bidding for him, and they don't apparently want him. That's a big team to cross off the list. The Yankees, they've got who did they sign?
Tulowitzki, DJ LeMahieu.
LeMahieu.
Yeah.
LeMahieu is the big one. Tulowitzki, it just holds them over. Mm-hmm. But that indicates that they're not as hot and heavy on him. So if you take – L.A. and New York Yankees out of the picture, David. Now, all of a sudden, one, the player's fault. The other, they just didn't want to pay the money, apparently. And I don't know that the Yankees are gone forever. I mean, I think they always are kind of lingering in the background. But this gives the White Sox a better opportunity than anyone. So the Sox are playing the long game. I like what they're doing. I like the way they've gone about it. I think they're sincere in wanting the guy. I also think that they're going to try to negotiate. They're not going to just try to blow him out of the water. I think there's part of me that's a little bit disappointed that the White Sox won't just pay the man, give the man his money, just pay him so you have him, make sure you get him. There's that element in the back of my head.
But don't you think that if they were at 200 to begin with, or this report were 225,
they'd still be shopping that offer?
Yeah, exactly.
So they're doing it the right way.
I think it's a little too early to be disappointed in the White Sox, because this might be the shrewd move after all.
It might be a very shrewd move.
They may be the only team that's willing to go up to 175.
And when we talked about it earlier, you know, why this guy's market is not where it would be, you know, we talked about this, that the whole Johnny Hustle, Charlie Hustle mm-hmm. comments. I think that that's part of it. I think there's an element to that. I think that gives you an opportunity that the White Sox might not have. You know, the White Sox are not an attractive place to go, because effectively it would be like going back to Baltimore. The difference being the White Sox have a lot more guys in their system, a lot more guys on the way up, presumably potential stars coming up, but that's all potential. So he would have to buy into that idea, and that's a hard sell for a player who's 26 years old and has been a part of a losing team and then suddenly was at a World Series, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting that they're slow playing it, just given that fact, given the idea that the belief was you're going to have to overpay him if you're going to get him here.
I think if there was an agent that was going to be grandstanding throughout this process with free agency, I would have guessed it would have been Scott Boras and not Dan Lozano. And I think that it's not Scott Boras tells you that Bryce Harper might be getting the kind of offers that maybe Manny Machado expected to get. I don't know that for a fact. Nothing has been reported that way. But the fact that Scott Boras hasn't been complaining about the level of interest in Bryce Harper would lead you to believe that he's getting a little bit more interest in the marketplace.
But Boras has, I mean, for whatever interest he's getting, he's not hearing what he wants to hear, because the guy's not signing. They have not, and they're going back and talking to the Nationals.
Didn't you? Because, look, Scott Boras takes his clients as late as they possibly can, and that's his history. That's his M.O.
Did you read the story about there's a possibility that that the Nationals would be, if they were to go ahead and sign Harper now, and everyone thinks the Nationals are lingering, they could give them that contract. They could be as much as 90% in the tax rate in a couple of years if they did that.
Yeah, I did see that.
That is, you know, that's double the number, basically.
But when they made that $300 million 10-year offer,
it was before they went out and did other things.
Yeah, that was prior to, you know, them spending a little bit more than, you know, they got Corbin,
yes,
right? They've added to their payroll. Are they willing to go over the threshold, the tax? That's a lot of money to
Something
pay.
For teams to consider.
We've put these guys together for so long. And it's, as far as we know, I don't know, you can go with whatever reporting you want, because the other day it was 250, right? But the gap between 300 million and 175, it's insane to be. Insane with these guys.
I think Theo was really giving the sentiment of the players when he said that stuff in the interview. It's when we've talked to each other in the offseason, that's been kind of the same grand scale message is, you know, we're a really good baseball team. We have a lot of really, really good players, and we got punched in the mouth a little bit last year.
Mullay and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Ian Happ. Happy, as we like to call him. He was on with Dan and Connor yesterday.
Good interview.
Yeah, a lot of fun, and he's a good talker. And let's get out to Mark Gonzalez, covering the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune, a good friend of the program. Gonzo, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
All fired up, all pumped up. You know, usually when you get to the convention week, that's when they introduce the Bryce Harpers of the world. That's when the big announcement
big
comes.
Surprise.
Usually.
Not so much this year?
Usually. I can't see anything different happening unless, you know, Dexter Fowler pops out of a cake, but he's with the Cardinals, so you can eliminate that scenario.
So, Mark, we have Tom Ricketts at 7:40 this morning, and there's a lot to talk to him about, but I guess in general overview of this offseason, I think people have accepted and maybe even understand why the Cubs might not be in on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado with all the core players that eventually are going to have to get paid big contracts with the Cubs. But why is there no in-between signings? Why have there not been any, you know, other moves to address an offense that is broken or a bullpen that needs depth?
There are different ways you can look at it. I think you look at their free agent history. I mean, the last 4 years, they've made big splash signings with Lester, Zobrist, the trade for Wade Davis, and then, you know, last offseason as well with some moves with Darvish and Chatwood, but they all haven't worked. And if you go back even deeper than that, I mean, we can start when this rebuild started with Edwin Jackson. He was supposed to be an innings eater. It didn't happen. The free agent area is so delicate. It can be so hit and miss, and they've missed as much as they've struck gold with guys like Lester. So that's one scenario. I think the other two is that there's always the rebound factor, and I think that's kind of the tricky one there, because we've all seen these guys that had off years or not peak years last year. We've seen them at their best, but the last year and a half, we haven't seen it. So I think they're putting trust again in their roster, but at the same time, there's that luxury tax threshold looming too. And, you know, people have said, well, you're going to have $60 million off the books next year. Well, if you do the math, you add up what they're going to have to pay a Bryant, a Baez, a Hendricks if they rebound, or at least if Chris stays healthy and the other two keep ascending, that's probably at least $50 million right there.
And, you know, I think that there's nothing wrong with playing fantasy baseball and imagining some guy coming in or some guy not coming in. And no matter how many people deny it, you know, we've heard over and over again that they don't have money, they're not going to do anything. The fact is that they did get Darvish last year. They have in the past made moves when you thought they weren't making a move. And for whatever reason, you know, Bryce Harper's dog's named Wrigley, whatever it is, there's still a belief that something's going to happen. And until he signs, there are some Cub fans that are just going to believe, because they want to, that he's on the way here.
Yeah, and I understand it based on past history. I mean, we saw it with Dexter Fowler a few years ago, where the market was just slow and everybody thought he was going to the Orioles, and all of a sudden he's walking out with Theo on a backfield. And I still remember having the shakes, tweeting it as I saw them walking out there. But I think in this case, you know, their established team, would Harper, you know, there's always the question, is Harper a need or is he a luxury? And that's, you know, that's aside from the money matters. Because I still think the bullpen right now is of great concern.
Mark, you were at the event the other night when Joe Maddon spoke in the charity function, and I think that you talked to him about this idea that Theo's introduced about him being more involved in the coaching, the hands-on kind of day-to-day aspect of coaching coaches or coaching players. And he agreed that he would be, I think he used the words, more earnestly involved. What did you make of that? And do you think that he, you know, as much as he publicly accepts and embraces that idea, do you think that it bothered him that Theo would make that a point of emphasis?
I don't think it bothered him on a long-term basis, maybe short-term, but I think, you know, at the end of the season, I think everybody felt clotheslined by the abruptness of the end of the season. And I think sometimes you take a step back and assess things, and I think maybe he feels that, yeah, it would help to be a little more hands-on. He does it at times. He picks his spots. And I remember in Detroit when Bryant was close to coming back from his shoulder injury, and Joe was spending a lot of time in the cage privately with Bryant for at least an hour, just going over a swing and trying to make sure he was helping his swing without, you know, compensating anything there. I've seen him hands-on before, but guys got to pick their spots. But I can see him like the football coach, and you guys see head coaches when they go from station to station in practice, making sure drills are done correctly or maybe pointing out a technique or two. And I think that's the way Joe will handle things this spring.
Is he getting a raw deal?
I think there's a lot of. I mean, I think there's too much magnifying on him. I think if you're going to point fingers, everybody's in this together from top to bottom, whether it be the decision makers, the personnel decisions, to him, but the players too. Look at it. I mean, this is the third batting coach they're going to have in 3 years. When do the players take, you know, responsibility for this? We haven't seen any trades involving these guys.
You know, Mark, I know you've been doing a little double duty with the White Sox offseason and covering that, so you're familiar with their state of mind. You covered the Sox back when they won the World Series and for several years, so you know the front office and the organization. How rare is it to see an agent like Dan Lozano call out reporters by name like he did yesterday, and to reveal, you know, the source of his discontent and the fact that the White Sox offer of 175 over seven might not be accurate, or if it is, it has no business being, you know, in a report. And what does that suggest to you?
First of all, we saw it 3 years ago with Casey Close when he expressed his anger over some of the reports he felt were misleading or inaccurate involving Dexter Fowler. We all thought he was going to the Orioles, or at least some of us thought so, but there were some things that didn't crystallize, and he ended up with the Cubs again, and Casey pointed out a few things about the inaccuracies in a statement. So there's that. In regards to the Lozano and the White Sox, I've known Danny for almost 20 years, and he's been pretty fair and upfront with me, and I think you can look at this a number of ways. First of all, maybe those reports, aren't so far off. It's just a way of discussing ways that present a contract, whether it be 7 years, but maybe there's an opt-out there, or maybe some of the money's deferred, or there's deferments coming down the road, or even the value now as opposed to at the end of the contract. So there's different ways you can look at it, and I think Danny's trying to do what's best for his client, and the White Sox have been pretty consistent about not even giving a kernel of indication that it definitely is Machado, even though we all know it is him that they're after.
And does this change the likelihood they get him? Or does this affect whether or not they can get him? I don't know if it's likelihood is the right word.
Oh, I think they can get him, but right now it's, we're past the eighth grade dance. They're at the table right now. So it's just a matter of when both sides are going to figure, okay, we've gone as far as we can. Let's get a deal where we move on.
Mark, you mentioned the bullpen needs for the Cubs, and obviously Kimbrel is still out there, and the Cubs have been, as we talked about, kind of embrace the status quo. But with that bullpen, that might be a dangerous thing to do. Is that a possibility? And if not him, then how are they going to address their bullpen needs?
Well, I'm a big tendency guy, and in the past, Theo and his group, they've been very careful about not earmarking a lot of commitments in terms of years and monies to the closers. They've usually kept those guys on a short-term basis, whether it be acquiring Wade Davis for 1 year as a rental, or even, Hector Rondon was a guy who was fairly cheap and effective for most of his career here. So I don't see that. But at the same time, they're going to need some insurance back there. The bullpen was fantastic last year, but to ask them to do what they did again, I mean, this bullpen was second in the majors in ERA, but they also had 600 appearances, which led the majors. And I think that's the danger zone when I say there's some concerns about the bullpen, because you look at a guy like Cechek, pitched in 80 games last year. Can he do it again and be effective? I don't know. You're not going to get Morrow until late April. Another issue. Strope was fantastic, but can he do it again with a heavier freight being the closer for some of those duties? I don't know. So, and you lose Jesse Chavez. So if they do add, it's probably going to be more the guy who's been experienced, but maybe a minor league contract deal. I mean, they did a terrific job, their pro scouting department, getting guys like Anthony Bass in the flow last year, even Justin Hancock before his arm blew up. Those guys, they're going to have to wave the magic wand again and maybe get one or two guys that are still out there, and hopefully they hit the ground running at some point.
Every time I hear Joe talk about Addison Russell, he uses language like when he comes back, and it's never if. It's always, when he gets back, is it a foregone conclusion, as it appears to be, that he is coming back and that they have made a decision and they will stay with him?
Well, I still think there's still a few more months to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what has to happen. I mean, he has to complete his program. And then he's got to he's going to work out down there, but at the same time he's going to have to face reporters in person for the first time and talk to them about what happened and how he's recovering from all this. There's still a long ways to go. I mean, if you look at when the incidents became public in detail to May 2nd or 3rd when he's scheduled to come back. We're only probably just past the halfway point in his recovery.
All righty. Thank you so much, Mark. We really appreciate it,
Thanks,
man. Great
Mark.
Catching up
Enjoy
with you.
Enjoy the convention.
All right. Take care, guys.
That's Mark Gonzalez. He covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. Does baseball, too.
Yeah, and I think you're right about Joe Maddon. When you see him talk about Addison Russell, there's nothing left for chance. I mean, he talked about when. He talked about supporting him. He left really no doubt where he stands in his expectation that Addison Russell will be a part of this team.
And Joe, that's even dating back to the Vegas general manager's meetings where Joe is – talking about Addison Russell on the set of the MLB Network. I mean,
hopefully when Addison, everything clears up, Addison's going to play.
He doesn't talk about texting him over the holidays because he doesn't expect him to be here. You know, this is the guy that has a relationship with him. He knows him. He feels like better than a lot of people do. And he is, he's making it known that he has an expectation that Addison Russell is going to be part of this team.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. We'll bring in Bruce Levine next. We'll ask him his take on what's going on with the White Sox and the Machado watch and the agent calling guys out by name. He didn't mention Bruce. You notice that? Bruce above that sort of scrutiny. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.